Insight Media.
So about 10 years ago, Justine Harmon had quite the experience with Meghan Markle. Justine's a podcaster of many hit series like Three, a new one that she has out about the murder of a teenage girl. But like Natalie and me, Justine used to work at magazines.
I was an assistant features editor at Elle magazine, where I had the opportunity to meet Meghan Markle during a routine meet and greet, and it was memorable to say the least. So Meghan coming in was sort of a non-event at the time, just because she wasn't who she is now. She was on Suits, which was a popular show, but it was not met with fanfare. It was met with me and my colleague Seth. So as I remember it, we met in a large conference room at the Hearst Tower on the 24th floor, a big glass space with a big oak table. And the three of us sat at the end of a large sort of dining room table. And it was customary for us to have notes, take notes when we met people. So I think we were all scribbling things down. And somehow it came up that I was getting married. We were all sort of like doodling and talking about my upcoming wedding. And Meghan was married at the time to someone else, not Harry. And we were kind of exchanging pleasantries about married life. And I can't remember what prompted. Maybe she was doodling too, and we noticed that she had beautiful handwriting. And either Seth or I remarked upon it, and she was like, "You know what? I could do the calligraphy at your wedding." And I was like, "Oh, that's not necessary," kind of like taken aback, but also pretty flattered. And I was like, "Whoa, maybe." I think at that point I thought that was the end of it. No one had ever offered to do like a personal favor for me, but she seemed extremely genuine. Someone followed up, whether it was her directly or a publicist. I don't have that email, but I do have an email from me to my wedding planner at the time being like, "This is totally random, but this actress on Suits would like to do some calligraphy at the wedding." And we settled on name cards. It wasn't a huge wedding. It was like 120 people. So it didn't seem like a huge heavy lift for her. And at some point, we confirmed that I was going to go to Michael's, an art store on 57th Street, and get the cards. But then there was some communication that either she was too busy or she was no longer available, and it didn't happen. But then a few years after this, I was working as a senior editor at Glamour, and I had the opportunity to interview Meghan again. This time it was right before it became very public that she and Prince Harry were together. I have the transcript from that conversation in which she remembers me. She remembers that conversation. She remembers my friend Seth, but she calls him Sean. And then she was like, "I wanted to do the calligraphy, but you turned me down," which wasn't the way I remember it. But at that point, who was I to argue?
Maybe Meghan is just the kind of generous soul who wants to do calligraphy for a stranger. Or maybe this is the perfect example of how Meghan was used to getting down in the muck and working to grease contacts, to build her public persona, to do the unglamorous, dirty business of relationship building and image crafting. Because even though Meghan was a victim of the press, maybe she was also a calligrapher, an artful writer penning her own story, twisting the words to create a beautiful image. So what would Meghan's story be? From Sony Music Entertainment and Campside Media, this is Infamous, and I'm Vanessa Gregoriadis.
And I'm Natalie Roberman.
So this week, we're picking up on the story of Meghan Markle and her very messy family.
Which is really also the story of Prince Harry and his messy family.
Yes, messy on all counts. But both of them are incredibly adept at maneuvering the press.
And you had some firsthand experience with this, right?
Well, I sure did. So the story I was reporting for Vanity Fair about Meghan and who she really was due to come out late in the year in 2018. It was what we in the business call a write-around, which means that Meghan wouldn't talk to me, so I was writing around her, calling other people who knew her, filling in the story that way. But then, after my story came out, five of Meghan's friends, who I don't think had talked to the press before, were suddenly gabbing to People magazine, saying that Meghan did indeed have humble beginnings and she was the greatest person in the world. And I mean, come on. The way this works is these friends would never have talked to People without authorization from someone. And I wondered, who would that someone be?
Right. It's pretty likely that that someone would be Meghan herself. And to be clear, a lot of celebrities and very ambitious people work to build their image in this way. I mean, maybe even Princess Diana did. We do have records to that effect. We just don't very often get to see it so explicitly as we do with Meghan.
Yeah, I mean, this is how Hollywood press works, right? You court journalists and plant stories. You have these anonymous sources or close friends that talk to publications and put out the exact narrative you want. In Hollywood, if somebody prints a bad story about you, you could put a statement out to denounce it, or maybe you leak a good story to counteract that. I mean, Meghan knows this. And the truth is, throughout the year, she's been known to be very friendly to PR professionals. Like on Suits, and all this according to Tina Brown, she would always be ready to do any promotion after shooting that executives wanted her to do. She loved a swag bag, a discount night at a hotel, just all that stuff that comes along with being a star. Tina says that after she became a princess, she even let one publicist know that that publicist could still send her free stuff. And more recently, I've heard that at a photo shoot, Meghan requested to take home the jewelry and the clothes she wore in the shoot. I heard that she said she didn't want anyone to sell that stuff on eBay.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, we should also say that the royal family also plays the press, but their culture is to never comment on personal matters publicly, even if something printed is wrong. It's all subterfuge behind the scenes. Here's how Prince Harry summed up his family's take on Meghan and her concern over the tarnishing of her carefully crafted image.
They thought, why couldn't she just deal with it? As if to say, well, you know, everybody else has dealt with it. Why can't she deal with it? No one would have private conversations with the editors saying, enough. My dad said to me, darling boy, you can't take on the media. The media will always be the media. And I said, I fundamentally disagree.
So from the beginning, there was a disconnect between Meghan's way of doing things and the royal family's press expectations. Meghan would ask for a royal meeting to shape her role. She was used to operating as a charismatic person, a gorgeous actor, asking to do calligraphy for important magazine editors' weddings, not waiting for approval for anything she wanted to do from a slow-moving royal family office. Plus, all of these people just sort of got off on the wrong foot. Meghan had that sloppy situation with Samantha and her father explode before the wedding, which culminated in her getting married in front of nearly 2 billion people who watched everything on TV. It was supposed to be a great day for England, making it seem like a progressive place where a half-black 36-year-old American could marry a prince, a place of inclusion and freedom and social progress. And yet none of Meghan's family members, except her mom, were actually present in the chapel.
My dad started doing these interviews, mostly saying things about me.
Meghan Markle's dad, right?
Yeah. Thomas Markle yesterday, and he was really upset.
Just does not stop, apparently.
It was incredibly painful. And the world is watching this drama play out.
The narrative needed to change. So not only had Meghan likely authorized those five friends to speak to People, but she now picked up her pen, maybe even a calligraphy pen, to write her father a letter, taking him to task. Natalie's going to read some of what she wrote.
You haven't reached out to me since the week of our wedding. And while you claim you have no way of contacting me, my phone number has remained the same. If you love me as you tell the press you do, please stop. Please allow us to live our lives in peace. Please stop lying. Please stop creating so much pain. Please stop exploiting my relationship with my husband. I realize you're so far down this rabbit hole that you feel, or may feel, there's no way out. But if you take a moment to pause, I think you'll see that being able to live with a clear conscience is more valuable than any payment in the world.
Wow. It seemed like Megan was just a hurt child trying to express herself. It was a damning condemnation of her father and of the British press. Because, of course, Harry's mother, Princess Diana, was thought to have been killed by the paparazzi, even if her own driver that night was drunk. And now it seemed like the paparazzi were ruining the life of Harry's wife. This letter was something no one could argue with. In fact, Meghan says the idea for the letter came from the Queen herself.
It was suggested by the Queen that I write my dad a letter. And I had gone to great lengths to get that letter to my dad discreetly.
Except this letter did not stay discreet for long.
Private letter from the Duchess to her dad has been made public.
Thomas's, we think, now released this letter, and it's pretty damaging.
This morning, new private moments between Duchess Meghan and her estranged
father. Now a very public and painful description of their rift.
For Meghan, it seemed like the latest, excruciating invasion of privacy. This heartfelt letter she'd written to her father had been leaked to the press. She was probably furious. And to make matters worse, once again, the royal family wasn't sticking up for her, even though it had allegedly been the Queen's idea for Meghan to write it in the first place. According to Tina Brown, she lobbied the royal family to sue over the publication of the letter. After all, there was a copyright argument to be made that the letter was Meghan's, and therefore the newspaper had infringed upon her copyright by publishing it. But the palace didn't agree to this request, and that made Meghan even more upset. From her perspective, they were just letting the tabloids get away with yet another infringement upon her. This book, The Palace Papers, that we keep referencing, talks about what would happen when Meghan got upset. She would, quote unquote, rev up Harry. His angst over his tragic life, his anger at the press and also the world, it would all fuse with Meghan's feeling of injustice and being trapped. So now the couple decided to file the suit on their own. Royal family be damned.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are suing the Mail on Sunday.
The lawsuit claims the Mail violated the law by publishing a personal letter she wrote to her father.
This is a massive error. If you're royal, keep stum, keep quiet.
Everything changed. This, of course, was seen as a huge departure from protocol. If Meghan and Harry were in a lawsuit against the Daily Mail, did that mean the Daily Mail would take vengeance by whipping up nasty coverage of other members of the royal family? Like Harry's dad Charles or his brother William? Because they certainly didn't want that. Plus, Meghan and Harry seem to be breaking their unspoken contract with the British public. The public pays for the royal family's lives, all the estates and, you know, the jewelry they wear, the, like, luscious meals they eat. And the royal family, in exchange, gives the public unfettered access to their private lives. The whole purpose of the royal family is to be public figures, to be gossiped about, projected upon, as frequent a topic of conversation as the weather. But Harry and Meghan weren't having it. They stuck to their guns.
Everything changed after that. That litigation was the catalyst probably for all of the unraveling.
Meghan had been in the royal family now for only a handful of months. It was long enough to experience the endless fox hunts and protocol, like needing to wear nylons to everything because royal women are not supposed to have naked legs. It was just so stifling. Remember, Meghan was in her mid-30s by this point, an independent woman. And now if she wanted money, her husband had to go pretty much ask his dad for it because she wasn't allowed to do anything for which she would be paid. But still, for Meghan, The lawsuit and the royal family's failure to back Harry and Meghan in it was the final straw of this whole relationship. At least, that was Meghan's story. But the truth was a little more complicated.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
So Meghan was sort of at the end of her rope when she was writing to her dad back in 2018, as we've described. She was feeling so ill at ease and homesick and loved her dad so much, and she just wanted to reach out to him, it seemed, with this letter. But the thing was, as she was preparing to send it, Meghan was corresponding with her press secretary. And it seemed like she was telling him that she knew someone might leak this letter, and so she knew it might have positive or negative PR value, too. Here's part of what she wrote to her press secretary.
Given that I've only ever called him Daddy, it would make sense to open as such, despite him being less than paternal. And in the unfortunate event that it leaked, it would pull at the heartstrings.
Meghan deliberately ended each page, according to her press agent at the palace, partway through a sentence so that no page could be falsely presented as the end of the letter. In the event that it was leaked, she wanted the full narrative to be understood and shared. She said she had toiled over every detail which could be manipulated. And of course, she used great penmanship. After she sent the letter, she texted her press secretary.
And if he leaks it, then that's on his conscience. But at least the world will know the truth. Words that I could never voice publicly.
Meghan's dad didn't act terrifically during this whole fiasco. I mean, he kept talking to the tabloids over and over. But Meghan wasn't just a victim. She was pulling at the public's heartstrings, trying to also further her image of a hurt young woman. This was a leak that had helped her public persona. But the palace was seemingly maneuvering too. Because things that hurt Meghan and Harry, that should have been private, were also leaked.
And then beginning of 2019, we discussed the whole concept of us moving to South Africa, supporting charities, organizations in Africa.
The job is a lot of cause-driven work. So I thought, well, this is great. There's an asset in having a woman of color when you have 50 plus Commonwealth countries, the majority of which are people of color.
And the palace signed off on us moving to South Africa. So my father's office knew about it, my brother's office knew about it, and my grandmother's office knew about it. No one else knew. It was very much an internal document. Then it was leaked to the Times newspaper. And then that whole plan was then scrapped because it's now become a public debate. Once plans like that become public debates, 9 times out of 10, it's going to fail.
So South Africa was a no-go. Harry claims that at this point, when the South Africa plan was leaked in April 2019, they'd already been looking for a different way of working for a minimum of 2 years. That doesn't really ring true because they only got married in May 2018, less than a year earlier, but no matter. Harry and Meghan went back to the drawing board and they brought in the A-team, this time from back across the pond. They hired a top US PR firm, Sunshine Saks, to help shape their image. Now, employing an outside publicist was pretty much unheard of for a royal. Especially not a PR firm famous for being one of the most ruthless in Hollywood. Sunshine Saks represented Harvey Weinstein when he was accused of sexual assault back in 2015, and it admitted to violating Wikipedia's terms and conditions by editing pages of its clients to remove negative comments. Meghan and Harry, it seemed, were trying to figure out how to consciously uncouple from the royal family. Could they be royals with all the privileges that that implies, but just not have to deal with the whole astonishingly boring Windsor family stuff and unbearable tabloids in England? Well, what if they moved to a Commonwealth country? Say, Canada.
Okay, Canada. I was speaking to my father. This is the plan. And he says, can you put them in writing? And I said, I'd rather not because of what happened last time. He says, I can't do anything unless you put it in writing. So I put it in writing, sent him emails on the 1st and the 2nd and the 3rd of January. And in one of those, I'd mentioned that, you know, if this wasn't going to work out, then we would be willing to relinquish our Sussex titles if need be.
And somehow, the press caught wind.
There's a lot of speculation that perhaps Canada, which is where Meghan lived before marrying into the royal family.
It became clear that the institution, he leaked the fact that we were going to be moving back to Canada. And the key piece of that story that made me aware that the contents of the letter between me and my father had been leaked was that we were willing to relinquish our Sussex titles. That was the giveaway. And I was like, wow. Like, our story, our life, literally got taken from underneath us.
But Meghan and Harry were not going to have their life, their story, taken out from underneath them. Because if there's one thing an actor understands, it's the power of story.
So with our team, we decided we would put out a statement that we were going to, sadly, be stepping back, not stepping down, but to just have a reduced role.
Yes, that's right. Harry and Meghan decided they wanted to step back from the royal family. After months, years of buffeting the winds of royal stories, they were reclaiming the narrative.
Big surprise from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Reportedly blindsiding the Queen.
Prince Charles and Prince William were only sent a copy of Harry and Meghan's statement 10 minutes before it was released.
The Queen got surprised, as like all of us, was the fact that they announced it officially on Instagram.
Harry, of course, denied this.
This idea that I supposedly blindsided my grandmother, this would never happen. I have so much respect for her.
This has been ongoing for months upon months.
At 2 p.m. on January 13th, 2020, an emergency meeting began between Harry, the Queen, and his family. They and their private secretaries sat down at Sandringham, a grand estate in Norfolk, where the royal family spends Christmas. But now, Harry was here under much less festive circumstances. The Queen was allegedly not happy. She loved her grandson Harry, but for the monarchy to be strong, she believed that everyone needed to merely keep calm and carry on, as the popular phrase goes. She perhaps wanted Harry and Meghan to be like William and Kate, who some people call the Duke and Duchess of Dull. She didn't want another rift in the beautiful royal fabric, like Princess Diana's tragedy, which had tarnished their names and pulled attention in all the wrong ways for years. And now she and, you know, the rest of the family was going to decide Harry and Meghan's fate.
Once I got there, I was given 5 options. 1 being all in, no change. 5 being all out. I chose option 3 in the meeting, half in, half out. Have our own jobs, but also work in support of the Queen. But it became very clear very quickly that that goal was not up for discussion or debate. It was terrifying to have my brother scream and shout at me and my father say things that just simply weren't true and my grandmother, you know, quietly sit there and sort of take it all in.
But Harry says the nail in the Megxit coffin came later.
That day, a story that came out saying that part of the reason why Meghan and I were leaving was because William had bullied us out. And once I got in the car after the meeting, I was told about a joint statement that had been put out in my name and my brother's name, squashing the story about him bullying us out of the family. I couldn't believe it. No one had asked me permission to put my name to a statement like that, because within 4 hours they were happy to lie to protect my brother. And yet for 3 years, they were never willing to tell the truth to protect us.
Now, Meghan and Harry, the same people who had set up their own website to advertise their royal duties, said they wanted out. And it was the media who drove them there.
Fair to say, Britain is in shock this morning.
A dramatic and shocking announcement from Prince Harry and Meghan Markle.
Announcing they're taking a step back from their royal duties.
Harry and Meghan fled to Canada, but they wouldn't stay long. Because Meghan's home state, California, was calling.
This is Infamous from Campside Media.
Now, before we go on, I just want to make clear that both Natalie and I have generally who cares feelings about the monarchy and Meghan in general. We like what she symbolizes, an independent American half-black woman as princess. And we don't like the beating up on Meghan just because she is those things. We think the paparazzi suck, and so do the British tabloids. We think the speculation about Kate's health issues is gross and invasive, and she's right to want to cover up what's going on, even if putting out an AI'd image of herself or whatever is totally bizarre. And we'll be talking a lot more about that next episode, so stay tuned. But Natalie and I are also people who love a good story. And we're not embarrassed by our high-low sensibilities or our taste for gossip. And the devolution of the Windsor monarchy and the way that it's intersected with Harry and Meghan's desires for a certain kind of life has just been amazing to behold. Especially this last chapter in their extrication. The California chapter, which actually had an unlikely hero. Someone who came to Meghan and Harry's aid, even loaning them his mansion in Los Angeles. Tyler Perry.
My name is Mud D. I'm Mud to the damn DEA. You only get a first name because I have warrants.
Yes, that Tyler Perry. The cheesy Madea star turned movie mogul who's become a billionaire by making cheap-to-produce non-union films out of his base in Atlanta. Turns out he and Meghan were friends. Now, you might think that a mansion in the entertainment capital of the world, owned by a billionaire, might not be the most discreet place for a couple trying to hide out from the paparazzi. But Meghan and Harry say it was just perfect.
It's amazing we found this place. It's secret, and so at least during COVID-19, we can take the dogs for a walk and have a little slice of normal.
We were there for 6 weeks and no one knew. My family still thought I was in Canada.
After 6 weeks in Tyler Perry's home, the paparazzi found them. So they moved to a bucolic estate in Santa Barbara. But the lawsuit was ongoing.
The couple's war with the tabloids now escalating.
Harry and Meghan are going to have to give up more intimate details to prove their case.
It all felt a bit ironic. Meghan had wanted out of the royal family so she could be more private, but now she seemed to be really public. She seemed to want to be back in entertainment, in the Kardashian-pioneered business of being herself and profiting off telling that story. There was even a kerfuffle with the royal family over a site that she wanted to set up called SussexRoyal.com. I mean, she just wanted her own digital landing page, but the royal family put the kibosh on that. Harry and Meghan could not be royals and also be working, so they couldn't use that name. And then, of course, Harry and Meghan gave the Oprah interview.
Tonight, for the first time, they tell their story.
Concerns and conversations about how dark his skin might be when he's born.
The royal family immediately went on the defense. Days before this interview, The Times, the same publication that reported that they were looking at moving to South Africa, put out another negative story about the pair. They published a report that Meghan had been accused of bullying by a former assistant, something that Meghan reportedly was saddened by. But Meghan and Harry had a trump card. Sure, the royal family might be able to leak stories, and they could leak stories back. But they were going to give a camera crew access to themselves, something the royal family would never let them do. And it would all be done in conjunction with their own outfit, which they rebranded from Sussex Royal to Archwell Productions.
And I remember in the car and driving up, and he said, "You know how to curtsy, right?" And I just thought it was a joke.
But how do you explain that to people? How do you explain that you bow to your grandmother and that you will need to curtsy, especially to an American? Like, that's weird.
Now I'm starting to realize this is a big deal.
The resulting six-part Netflix documentary was a calculatedly intimate portrait of an extraordinary couple that had, against the odds, survived extraordinary circumstances. It took hits at the press and at the royal family, including breaking the horrible news that Meghan had suffered a miscarriage during her lawsuit with the tabloids.
I really wasn't sleeping. And the first morning that we woke up in our new home is when I miscarried.
I believe my wife suffered a miscarriage because of what the Mail did. I watched the whole thing.
Now, this is just terrible. And Meghan, despite being a massive player behind the scenes of all this, was really just one woman trying to handle an incredible amount of stress. The truth is, we have empathy for Meghan. But then she does things, like name-dropping, that are also just so annoying.
Beyonce just texted. Really meant.
Shut up.
Just checking in.
Just checking in, just casual.
I still can't believe she knows who I am. She said she wants me to feel safe and protected. She admires and respects my bravery and vulnerability and she thinks I was selected to break generational curses that need to be healed.
That's well said.
Amidst it all, Harry and Meghan welcomed their second child, Lilibet, whose godfather is Tyler Perry. In December 2021, Meghan and Harry won their court case against the tabloids. But they kept fighting in the court of public opinion, just releasing more and more confessional ventures that were meant to gin up support for them and profit. Like Prince Harry's book, Spare.
Upon arriving home, I'd been horrified to discover that my nether regions were frostnipped as well. And while the ears and cheeks were already healing, the todger wasn't. What was the universe out to prove by taking my penis at the same moment it took my brother?
And, of course, their Spotify podcast.
We immediately went to an official engagement in this township called Nyanga. And there was this moment where I'm standing on a tree stump and I'm giving this speech to women and girls. And we finish the engagement, we get in the car and they say, there's been a fire at the residence. What? There's been a fire in the baby's room. And we came back, and of course, as a mother, you go, oh my God, what is, are, everyone's in tears, everyone's shaken. And what did we have to do? Go out.
The royal family has weathered each turn with austere silence. But Meghan and Harry's departure has also coincided with public support for the monarchy reaching a historic low. And it's not just Meghan and Harry that have punctured the crown. Top on the list of offenders is Prince Andrew and his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, which included allegations that he engaged in sex acts with a minor who had been trafficked by Epstein, in addition to other wrongdoing.
You've been on his private plane?
Yes.
You've been to stay on his private island?
Yes.
You've stayed at his home in Palm Beach?
Do I regret the fact that he has quite obviously conducted himself in a manner unbecoming? Yes.
Unbecoming? He was a sex offender?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm being polite.
You were staying at the house of, yes, a convicted sex offender?
It was a convenient place to stay.
Prince Andrew denied all allegations, but he was still forced to withdraw from his public roles. And we're not going to see him in the United States anytime soon. I mean, I'm sure our law enforcement would be very interested if he stepped on our soil. Then came the death of Queen Elizabeth II, the formidable matriarch who'd ruled for 70 years, longer than any other monarchy in history.
A few moments ago, Buckingham Palace announced the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
Queen Elizabeth II was replaced by Harry's dad, King Charles, who has always been less popular, for the reasons we described, plus his very public affair with Camilla Parker Bowles that happened during his marriage to Princess Diana. And Meghan continues to tell her story. In fact, she just announced that she's moving her podcast to another network, and they're re-releasing it. And even though she's no longer a princess, since Charles became king, she's now referring to her kids again by their official titles, Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet of Sussex. The change was noted in Meghan's Instagram about her daughter's christening. Because hey, even when you're an ex-princess, and maybe especially when you're an ex-princess, you've still got to hustle. Next time on Infamous, we're talking about what has tongues wagging across pretty much every land. What is going on with Kate Middleton?
Where's Kate?
Has anyone seen Kate? You know, Kate. No. Not Kate Moss. Not Kate Bush. Not Kate Winslet. No, Kate Middleton. Apparently she went in for some operation and now, all of a sudden, she's vanished.